Hello and welcome to this podcast episode as part of the Speak Up for Peace online course. My name is Thomas. I am a campaign strategist and I have done some campaigns and I can talk from my experience. I've done all kinds of weird campaigns, mostly around climate justice, animal rights, but also about anti-militarism. And with me, I have two other people. Who are you?
My name is Vanai. I am currently residing in Greece. I am not a campaign strategist, but I am working a lot on the communication for social initiatives and also campaigns. And I'm just young and fascinated with internet and how it can change things. So this is my role in this conversation today. And I want to pass it on to Claudia.
Thank you, Danae. I'm Claudia, and I work as the Communication and Volunteer Coordinator for the International Secretariat of FCI. So in my job, I also create campaigns together with other FCI organizations, and it's mostly social media online campaigns for awareness raising or information to volunteers.
Thank you. Nice to have the two of you here. If you're listening to this, you probably just did the previous module about campaign strategies for advocacy. And I would like to start a bit with this, maybe like tactics do you have or what makes you think that a campaign can be effective? Like what ideas do you have for that?
In my experience, it's very important that you know who you want to talk to and why. And then you can choose specific days, for example, or specific networks or other existing campaigns or topics to connect your campaign to so that it will exist in an already present environment and conversation, and it will make it stronger.
So, for example, around 8th of March, the International Feminist Day, or 21st of September, an International Day of Peace.
Exactly. So you can choose international days that are in the list of the UN days, but there are also other international days, for example, proclaimed by international organizations that are very well known. Yes. Yeah, so you can choose the one that is most connected to your topic and to the message that you want to send.
From my side, thank you, Claudia, for this. The first part is who you are and what do you want to tell. For me, these are two crucial base questions that they're gonna, based on these answers, you're gonna make your tactics on. But I think a very crucial element also in this is originality, because in a way you want to be provocative in some way or annoying in some sort of ways. So you have to pick what works best. The first stage for this is always a very thorough research on what is your context, who you are, where are you coming from, what do you want to say, who do you want to say to, and then you kind of form, based on these needs, what do you want to do. But keep it original and keep it fun also for you. Make sure that it's something you enjoy doing. So, I don't know, if you don't like gathering up signatures, maybe it's okay to not do it. But it's usually based on the context.
So far we had international days are good, originality is good, keep it fun, something that you enjoy doing. I already heard a bit like, yeah, if you want to get attention, maybe like there are many different ways to get it. And usually I think for me, a core principle is that what you think of when you think of a protest, you shouldn't do. That will not get your attention. Like lots of people who are dressed like protesters walking on the street with the same signs that we already know, it will usually not get you where you want to be. I think what I've done that was a bit more effective, like I used to work for an animal rights organization and we were like five activists and we dressed up in like different clothing. Like, I don't know, we had one in front of a slaughterhouse where, I don't know, I was the slaughterer and my two colleagues were a cow, and like we did a whole kind of performance in front of the slaughterhouse and just invited journalists to come. And journalists loved it because they saw, these crazy animal rights protesters, they dressed up and then they could put us on the headlines because it's an interesting image. So it's good to think in images and something that is, that catches attention. It's not always about like getting the biggest number of people. That can be one thing. Like, I think it's good to have superlatives, like the so and so many people were on the streets, but it can also be, oh, these activists, this strange thing, or they did this really unlikely thing somehow. So yeah.
I also wanted to know in your experience, what you think about either appealing to more negative emotions or to positive emotions, because I find that when you appeal to positive emotions, people are more likely to then act. But if you like shame them into acting a certain way, then it's not very useful. I don't know what you think about this as well.
Yeah, for me, both are useful. Like, positive emotions have their legitimacy and negative emotions as well. I think from some of my experience, I know that negative emotions like sadness or anger can work really well in activating people, especially anger. I mean, it's anger at injustice, no? So it's kind of one of the core elements of this emotion. So in that way, sparking anger can activate people somehow. Of course, you need to be careful with this anger. Like, where do you direct it to? And is this, you know, is this actually justified? And like, in the strategy chapter, you also probably learned, dear listener, that you shouldn't escalate immediately. Like, you should start with a smaller action and build up to it. Yeah. Like, people need to understand why you have this anger. Like, people shouldn't be alienated by this anger as well. So for me, it always depends a bit on the context, like how angry can you be or how negative can you be, or sometimes positive emotions are actually more effective and sometimes negative emotions can be more effective. So I mean, could be either. Emotions in general are good. I think it's good to evoke some emotion. Yeah.
I completely agree with this. And also it depends on the context again. That's because, for example, I'm going to give a case study from Greece. Greece has a lot of problems socially, and people I have noticed working here have become kind of like desensitized to them. So it's very difficult to draw them in with positive emotions, like, yes, let's do this so everyone can feel included or something like that. So for me, I always try to shock them out in whatever campaign I'm a part of with, look at this, look at what you are so desensitized in. And I am highlighting why this should be resolved and it shouldn't exist. But for example, this same thinking wouldn't be applicable necessarily to another context. So it's really dependent on the context, what kind of things you want to evoke. The only thing I want to highlight is the strategy that is, and the tactic that works across the board, is that you're basically offering the bridge between inaction and action. Like inaction and change. So you have to really think about how do you sell it, let's say, for lack of a better word. It should be accessible to everyone. It shouldn't be about something that only a few people can do, something that speaks to the emotion of people, because emotions are something that universally as humans we have, so it's great to tap into it, and then give them what they can do to resolve it. So you basically build up an emotion and you offer a resolve as well. Usually in this way, people are like, yes, I will go. I will do this. At least this has been my experience so far with activism.
I think if something that I've also experienced is to kind of mix different kinds of emotions. So for example, you fight against something really cruel, to fight it with cuteness is something that people would not think about usually, you know, but sometimes these kind of unlikely things can be what gets your attention. Like, I think in Austria, for example, there's this group called Grandmas Against the Right Wing, and it's grandmas that protest against right-wing politics, basically. And it's interesting because they are not as affected by police violence or by the kind of backlash that you usually have, because they are grandmas and they are very nice. Like, journalists love to talk to them. So these kind of like things can, like, I don't know, in an anti-militarist context, you could have grandmas against killer robots or grandmas against nuclear weapons. Like, this would automatically get news attention just because it's unlikely. Yeah.
Yes, I think the paradoxical, in a way, makes heads turn, and this is what you want. So grandmas against killer robots, it's amazing. I want to support this already. because it makes me laugh. And also humor works sometimes depending on what you're targeting. For example, I think about like White Savior Barbie, for example. It's another great example because you just see Barbie in all sorts of like volunteering scenarios, and it's really actually fun and enjoyable to watch, and you learn something from it. So another good example of like how cuteness or like different elements that you didn't really think they would go together actually generate traction.
How about press work? What else? Anything else that you think is important? Like this element of don't keep doing the same thing, doing something surprising is like the most important, but also it needs to go together with keeping a red thread. So, okay, you do lots of things that are maybe unlikely, or but still you should always have the same message. Every message should, every action that you do should come back to your message. People should understand your message just by looking at your action. And they should kind of see some kind of consistency in the language that you use. Also in the kind of images that you show, like people should understand that it all comes from the same place and it all leads to the same thing, which is trying to get you more involved in it, you know, by signing a petition or by joining a protest or whatever, you know.
Yes. And I think it needs to be very clear what the action that you want from your audience is. So if you want them to sign a petition, then at some point your action needs to lead to that. And also with press work, I think if you can already incorporate what is your final goal that you want people to reach already in the press, then people who are interested can come and already join you in that, or just be curious about what you have to say, and then they will be present and they can, yeah, step into your action.
And how do you find journalists to invite for your actions?
So when it comes to journalists, you can approach it in two different ways. So one, you can just try to call different newspapers, try to find the right contact, maybe the right department that is connected with your topic, and call them. Calling is usually more effective than writing an email or, yeah, other ways of contacting them. And when you call, you should be very direct in what you want them to do. Present very quickly your message and the fact that you want this message out. They don't have much time for you, so you need to be quick and to the point. And the other way is to build connections. So if you know someone who is a journalist and they know someone that writes about the topic that you want to discuss, then it's good to have these personal connections. And if you have an inside contact, or you built a connection from the previous calls that you had, just keep it, nurture it, and that is very important.
Yeah, I have similar experiences. Like what I did, I just started collecting contacts of journalists. Like I tried different ways to get contacts of journalists. Basically, I also looked at, okay, what journalists have already written about a topic like this. I just Googled and I looked at, okay, what journalists might be interested in this. And then I added them to a list as well. Yeah, it's also good to think of like stuff like radio or TV, or yeah, it's not just newspapers that could report about it, but also other kind of media, magazines, so on. Yeah. Anything is interesting. Maybe we slowly come to social media. Any tips for social media if people want to do campaigns on social media?
I'm just thinking two things. One is you have a campaign in person, you know, in the square, and then you want to advertise it before and showcase it after. So this is one thing. And the other thing is having a campaign completely online. So my first tip would be really have a solid concept and plan before going into your action. So don't wait for the concept of how you will present your action online until the very end, until you are in the action. You have to have a plan before, so that the in-person action and the online action are very tied together. They have the same concept, the same visuals, the same message, the same hashtags or slogans. And this you need to plan in advance.
Specific fonts that you use, specific letters that you use, specific language that you use, colors, all of those things really, really help. Because people can see this post, for example, and be like, oh, it's from this initiative. Like, for example, in my mind, I have Greenpeace, which was kind of the campaigns that they were doing. They were generating a lot of traction because they were using negative emotions in their visual and they were not shying away from it. So for me, this is an example of a good campaign, how to do it online. And because they were always doing this, they never changed it. The other thing is transparency for me. Sometimes campaigns don't really invest in like making their work like more known and archiving it online somehow. But this kind of like makes it difficult for people to see what has been going on with this campaign, what are the goals, like all of those different things, what are the steps, what has been accomplished so far. So transparency around what you're doing, I actually think it's a great, great thing to have. Also because, I mean, my motto for this is that you want people to look at you as legit, that you're legit and serious and you know what you want to do, because this generates a lot more engagement. People will generally gravitate towards something more legit to participate in. If they see something a bit all over the place, nah, maybe not. And this can actually start be cultivated in your, the way you present yourself online and offline. But yeah.
For the legit part, also offline, like it makes a big difference if you have like a printed, a designed protest sign on the stand somewhere and everybody has like the same and the same color, or if you just have like a carton that you wrote on personally, like that also has its charm, but it just seems less organized and seems less professional basically. So the more you fake your professionality basically, or the more you just include this kind of professional design and like, and so on into your campaign, the more legit you will seem as well. And that gives you power as well, which is what campaigning in the end is all about, like gaining the power to make, to influence decision making.
And for this, I want to add that there are great tutorials online. I would highly suggest looking at tutorials from YouTube, especially about branding and how businesses are doing it, because they have great, great ways that you can use actually to put it into the campaign. So also don't be shy to like search a lot, ask around, try to find things maybe in unconventional places like businesses, but this stuff actually work. So yeah.
Yes. Also it's good to keep this consistency to, for example, you can advertise your in-person action before on social media. This could be very explicit, or it could also be a bit mysterious to, you know, entice people to come to your event and see what's going on. And then to publish pictures or videos, or also more organized interviews, for example, afterwards. And if you did manage to have these press articles published or videos from influencers or other external content, it's very good if you share it in your own social media. This gives you more legitimacy that we were talking about before, and more credibility. And yes, it expands your reach.
Thank you for all of your wisdom. I think I want to come towards the end of this podcast episode. Is it actually a podcast episode? If a podcast is more like a running thing. Okay. Sorry, dear listener. Anyway, so we want to talk a bit about backlash and like self-care. It's kind of this aspect around it. Like, I think for me, what's important is, so you have your target in mind and you want your target to do things. Sometimes it's good to try to talk to your target. So to consistently offer, hey, would you be up for a meeting now? Could we talk about this? And like try to get their attention and get them to sit on the table with you and to negotiate. I think for me, that is always important, and changing your tactics according to. But yeah, targets and of course the general public, they can also not like a campaign. What ideas do you have for backlash? What experiences do you have with this?
I think it's important to identify what comments you receive are genuine and can be reasoned with, or, you know, they can lead to an interesting and positive conversation, and what comments are trolls or are hateful and really don't lead anywhere if you comment on them or if you engage with this conversation. So this is a bit up to your interpretation. But yes, general suggestion, take a deep breath before you decide if you comment, if you don't comment, and what to do. Don't panic. Don't just comment right away before deciding what your strategy is and what also is the best way for you to protect yourself as well.
For me, it starts from another place, which is that you generate a campaign to generate annoyance and provocative feelings. So good if you have backlash and people being like, ah, why are you doing this? Why are you blocking this road? It gets very irritating for me. Perfect. You're doing your job. So the next step is to see how do you want to respond to this. And what I do is usually before everything starts, when I am in a calm place, I sit down and write like all of the answers I want to give in different scenarios, in different kinds of backlash that I might encounter. For example, if I know that my action is about blocking a road, I write down, okay, one person gets very annoyed with me and they step out of the car and they ask me to move. I write down what they want to do in this scenario. Or someone starts getting very offensive with me. What do I want to do? So planning ahead is great also emotionally, because our stress as humans is kind of like rooted into not having a plan. So if we don't have a plan, we get stressed. But if we do have a plan, not so much, because we already know in our toolkit what we have to respond to this. Of course, you cannot predict everything, but you can have a pretty big plan, an array of things already prepared. And then is the other thing about trolling. Thank you for mentioning it, because sometimes you might engage in conversations that are actually fruitful and get your point across. But sometimes you get people, the most usual one I get is that, yeah, okay, you are doing this, but what about this other thing? And usually the person doesn't really care about this other thing. They just want to say this to shut down whatever actual point I'm trying to make. So in this scenario, I make plans again as to how do I want to respond. And the way to plan out all of these responses is, how can I navigate this by completely shutting down the other side if I don't want to engage with it, and stay true to my message and what do I want to say? Usually I don't prefer to get personal or like answer from an interpersonal point of view, but rather as a campaign to person point of view, because remember, you are carrying a message here. It's not just you as a person, but yeah, stuff like this most of the time. But also sometimes it's very helpful to unplug, especially if it's online. If you receive hate online, maybe you can choose to filter out comments or to not respond to messages, or have another person respond to messages for you.
Yeah, we also talk about this all sitting in places where it's possible to do also activism on the street and so on. So this is, of course, not safe and possible everywhere. And like, what is safe always very much depends on your context. So keep that in mind, keep yourself secure, make a risk management plan in advance, and include that in your strategies, in your strategy. Like in a place where it's forbidden to talk about war, then maybe you cannot go to the streets and talk about war, you know, but maybe there's a sneaky little way that you can find that you could still do something, or maybe there's another kind of form of action that you could take that is still possible, you know. So campaigning is all about being creative and finding a way that is effective, gets the attention of people, gets change done, but also keeps yourself healthy and safe. Maybe that's it for today's episode of Speak Up for Peace. Thank you so much for joining, Danai and Claudia. It was a pleasure to have you here. Have fun with the rest of the course. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye.